Hi there, we are James and Dan, two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line. We're being joined by Del Murphy lookalike Eric Edholm, who covers the NFL, wow. NFL draft for NFL.com. It's on his Twitter profile. It's not something I'm just making
okay.
up. Eric, thanks for spending a few minutes with us this afternoon. Eric, I'm just going to be brutally honest right out of the gate. I have a quarterback crush. His name is Will Levis. People hate me for having this quarterback crush. Can you talk me off of Will Levis?
Yeah, I mean, you're not alone. Just so you know, I want you to know there's a support system out there, and they're called NFL evaluators. I've been making some calls the last few weeks, and you know, up to this point, I didn't have a great feel for how the league viewed, you know, the 23 quarterback class or the potential class, or we still don't technically know who's coming out, everybody. But the love for Levis around the league is higher than I imagined. You know, and it's not to say that, you know, it's not obvious on the surface, like, what he brings to the table, right? He's got a big, thickly built physical skill set. He's got a great, you know, really good arm strength. I don't know if that it's elite, but it's not, you know, anything to bat an eye at. He just didn't play as well this season while banged up, I should add, that I think some people expected. And there's going to be a lot of Levis hate out there and, you know, draft Twitter and whatnot. I think there's a pretty good anti-Levis contingent right now. But it sort of boils down to the Josh Allen debate we had coming out, except at a higher level of football, right? Mountain West versus SEC. Those are the kind of prospects who I think the tape – You can't just look at completions and incompletions or, you know, things like that. I think you have to look at the skill set and say, can we get him to get better at things that we think he can do really well? And then that sort of boils down to what he is as a prospect. And tough kid. I kind of like him, maybe more than others, but maybe not quite as much as you do. So I think he's going really high in this draft.
All right, Eric, with that being said, because we've had the debate on the show, we know tons of people in Houston are already looking at this. It's like the comparison of two, and I always am the guy that puts it on the whiteboard and compares and contrasts. You got Levis, who evidently didn't have a whole lot of talent around him and didn't have a great season. You've got Bryce Young, who everybody says has too much talent around him. Anybody could throw to those receivers. And then on top of it, he's small. So there's been those criticisms. We've talked about Levis. Talk about, like, Bryce Young and how you feel about him personally, and is the size going to be something that really does matter in a negative way in the NFL?
Yeah, I think it's fair to raise that question. He's going to measure in somewhere around 5'10", 190 pounds, just for, you know, and for people who haven't watched him extensively, yes, he escapes pressure very well. You know, he moves around the pocket very well, and he can run when he needs to. He's not a scrambler. He's not, you know, really a Lamar Jackson or even a Jalen Hurts for that matter. So, you know, the fact that he suffered a shoulder injury, I think it was Mississippi State game, I could try to remember exactly when it was, but he suffered a shoulder injury, wasn't, you know, as affected down the stretch. But, you know, you wonder how a thinly built guy like that is going to hold up. As far as the other stuff goes, I mean, between the ears, give me Bryce Young right now over any quarterback in the 23 class, assuming he comes out. We don't yet know that, but he is playing in the bowl game. You know, he's a super competitive kid, really smart, was the number one, you know, quarterback recruit in his class, or, you know, depending on who you ask. But still, I mean, an elite player in high school who got to watch Mac Jones during that championship season, got his feet wet a little bit, and then was thrown into the fire and won a Heisman Trophy. Now, this year didn't go as planned, but yeah, I don't ever like punishing prospects for the players they have around them. I think you can say, hey, you know, Will Levis didn't have the offensive line he did in 2021. You know, it was basically Chris Rodriguez Jr. in the backfield and, you know, a couple of other guys who may have NFL, you know, a possibility. So it's more of a boost for Levis than it is something, you know, we're going to take away from Young. I don't think that's really fair to prospects, but I do worry about the durability factor because, you know, he's elusive to a point, but avoiding contact is going to end up being a lot more important on the NFL level. His processing ability, though, is, I think, at an elite level and even better than somebody like a Mac Jones, for instance.
Eric Edholm, our guest on the HRP guest line. I've been studying both of them, and I really like them both. So I like that point that you made where, you know, a lot of times whenever you're promoting one guy, a lot of people take that as your, you know, dissing the other guy. You can like both players at the same time. And the Bryce Young critiques, I think you nailed both of them. Like, his size is obviously the biggest question when it comes to Bryce Young. One thing that I have fear about a lot of times when it comes from, you know, a college quarterback taking that next step to the NFL is something you alluded to, is the pieces around. Because we're watching the NFL right now where Jalen Hurts is taking off. They added A.J. Brown. Tua is taking off. They added Tyreek Hill. So obviously, yeah, Skill position players help the quarterback a lot. I would say it's even on a bigger scale in college. And look what Bryce Young this year, you know, he's got a first round running back. Maybe the receivers aren't as good this year as they were last year. They certainly aren't, because last year he had Jamison Williams, a first rounder. He had John Metchie, a second rounder. The pieces around Bryce Young, the offensive line's very good. How do you think playing around superior talent in college affects a quarterback when they're making that next step to the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if your offense is just dump it off quickly, get it into the playmaker's hands, and, you know, sit back and pull out your toothpick, well, I mean, that's probably not going to translate. Although, to be fair, I mean, if you were going to compare a quarterback style-wise, I think, you know, early New Orleans career Drew Brees is kind of what I see a little bit of, right? An undersized guy who makes strong reads and makes quick, decisive you know, throws and things like that. And he had Alvin Kamara and, you know, Marcus Colston and Jimmy Graham and whoever else, you know, and there was a lot at Reggie Bush, whoever, Jeremy Shockey, plenty of talent in New Orleans. We don't say that Drew Brees obviously can't play, you know, couldn't play in the league. He's one of the, you know, best quarterbacks, most accurate of all time. So, yeah, I think it for a place like Alabama, obviously, and I think it's fair to say that maybe some of Mac Jones's weaknesses in college were a little bit masked by the fact that he had such superior talent around him and, you know, had good structure. You know, I think that's important. That's helped guys like C.J. Stroud look good at times. But at the same time, I also think that, you know, the expectations at a place like Alabama and with everybody knowing that there are five-star recruits all over the field does sort of raise the stakes a little bit. And when you're coming off a Heisman Trophy and, you know, to run in a national championship, I mean, everybody sort of looks at you as the guy to deliver the bacon one more time. And, you know, the fact that he couldn't do it, I don't think should go all on Bryce's shoulders. But I think it definitely will add a few layers of skin for him as far as his mental toughness and knowing, you know, how to be the quarterback of an NFL franchise.
All right, Eric, they got two number ones, the Texans do. We know that. The other one is the Browns pick. Based on what you've been studying, how you can see this draft going, I'm interested, where would you go with the second pick and who would you look at? Because we've talked about everything from defense to getting the best and maybe the first receiver off the board, and I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I love the receivers in this class the way I have the last, really, you could argue, 4 or 5 years. I mean, we've had an unbelievable run of receiver talent come out in the draft. Now, this would probably qualify as a average year if we look back over a larger span, but, you know, compared to recent years, maybe not so great. Is Quentin Johnson worth a mid first round pick? You know, that's going to be debated and scrutinized. Jordan Addison, a couple others certainly would be in the mix, I think. But yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be some top tier defensive talents in that range as well. I know that Kenyon Green was, what, the 14th, 15th pick in the draft last year, but at the same time, I could argue that taking one more lineman there wouldn't be a bad thing, especially since, in my opinion, this will be a top heavier group, especially at tackle. You know, if you get into the mid second round, your options might be pretty limited. So, you know, whether it's a defensive tackle, for instance, Brian Bercy or somebody like that, or, you know, if you feel comfortable with the receivers in that range and feel like it's not a reach, okay, there you go. But, you know, offensive tackle, certainly with Skoronski and Paris Johnson from Ohio State, a couple others who I think figure into that range. I think there are going to be enough options there for where they feel like they're not reaching at a position of need or taking somebody who, yeah, he's the highest guy on our board, but, you know, we're not in love with him, that sort of thing. I think they'll be in a good spot to be able to, A, fill a need, and also, B, not feel like they've overextended themselves with that pick. So, yeah, they're in a pretty good spot. I think they'll be able to, and I know last year obviously was maybe a little heavier defensive draft, but, you know, especially with Metchie missing the year, but still, I could see them going any number of directions with that second pick.
Eric Edelman, NFL.com, our guest on the HR&P guest line. Eric, you know, Levis I have slightly ahead of Bryce, but my number one, you know, optimal scenario for the Texans is that they trade down, because I think that they need tons of help across the board, trade down, add more draft capital, you know, improve the overall body of the team as opposed to just one singular position. How much demand do you think that there would be at the top of the draft?
Yeah, that's going to be a really interesting question. I think obviously, as a Texans fan, of assuming they wrap up the number one pick, in which, you know, I think they can actually do this weekend if they win and the Bears win, I should say. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that's the scenario to clinch it. But anyway, I mean, if you're a Texans fan, you want all these quarterbacks to do well. You want, you know, I mean, you want as many of them to thrive as possible. The kind of the wild card guy, although as I say this, I'm kind of changing my mind, but the two guys who potentially could be in that range, because I think Levis will probably go prior to the Texans' second first rounder, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
CJ Stroud, sort of a system guy, thrives in structure, not so much out of structure, pocket passer, kind of like Young in that if you need him to run, he can. And he got a little better at it this year than he was the year before. But, you know, there's still some question as to what his true ceiling is. I think he might be an okay quarterback, decent, kind of a Jared Goff-level starter. And that's not a, you know, a knock based on how Goff's played this year. Anthony Richardson, though, at Florida is really the one who, you know, he's the wild card option of pure talent. He's almost more wild card than Levis. Because Levis, you know, multiple seasons of starting experience. Richardson came into this year with 68 passes or whatever it was in his career and didn't take a massive step forward throwing the football. I mean, you can look at a great tape like Utah and say, wow, he looks fantastic. Or you can look at a less great tape like the next week against Levis in Kentucky. I thought he looked confused, hesitant, you know, raw. I mean, all those things. So what you're betting on is the future. And he could go to a team like, say, the Lions or one of these teams that have multiple firsts, Seattle, where they have, you know, a Geno or a Goff who can obviously tide them over for a while. So obviously in these situations, you want as many quarterbacks as possible to thrive during the pre-draft process. And I think that would offer the most opportunities to potentially trade down and maybe meet some more of those needs, accumulate picks.
Eric, great stuff. Really enjoy the conversation. I'm sure we'll catch up again before April. Enjoy studying.
Yeah, I hope you guys have a great holiday. We got a lot of draft stuff to study in the next 4 or 5 months, but it's going to be fun.
All right, happy holidays. Eric Edholm, lead NFL draft, NFL.com, does outstanding work. All right, coming up next, he mentioned Will Levis there a bit. We know my love for Will Levis. He's my quarterback crush. What if I told you that you can have your quarterback at number one? I'll give you that. I won't trade down like I want to do. I'll give you your quarterback at number one, but how would you react if it's Will Levis? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Great stuff from Eric Edholm. Hope to have him on more leading up to the NFL
draft. I was just
going to
say, part-time Brendan doing a full-time job just getting a guy that could actually give valuable information to us on the draft that's so important.
I mean,
to us.
I do that daily. What are you talking about?
We need to have him back.
Well, it feels early to have a draft guy, right?
It does, but it's Houston.
But I was like, we're talking about draft every day, so
we're already in draft season because the end of the season sucks. No one's interested, so we're already in draft season. It was perfect.
Here's a question I want the Hive to text in about. Do you want to hear more about the draft or the Houston Texans at the Tennessee Titans on Saturday? 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. I feel like I know the answer. I want to talk more draft. I'm tired of talking about the 2022 Houston Texans. Blankers, I feel like I know how you're going to answer this. We know that I'm kind of team trade down. What are you're more just take Bryce, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay. So what if I told you that you can have your quarterback? You can have it at number one. I'll concede my trade down. I'll say, all right, quarterback it is, but for the compromise, the quarterback's Will Levis. How would you react if the Houston Texans, when they're on the clock on April 27th, select Will Levis as QB number one, as pick number one?
See, here's my thinking on that. As long as they get their guy, and I said this from day one, it doesn't matter who my guy is. It doesn't matter who I want them to take. What matters is that I've said all along, if Nick Caserio is truly doing his job, whether he got it right or wrong with Sauce and Stingley, he took his guy. He needs to have that same kind of approach to whichever quarterback he wants. And I don't believe they should trade down when they're in a position to at least take their really first solid shot at getting a quarterback that could be a difference maker. Get your guy. And if there's one guy that you're hyper-focused on, like I've said all along with a lot of the other picks too, just have conviction and know that that's the guy that I want. And if I'm doing my job correctly for the Houston Texans, I'm getting the best guy for this job that has the best chance to succeed with all of the things, the measurables, the intangibles, everything. If that's Will Levis, then go get Will Levis. And then go give him every opportunity to succeed. Put everything around him. Put the right coaches around him, the right head coach around him, and take your best shot giving him every opportunity to succeed. Because this is it for me. This is the time to go do it. And you don't have to go with Bryce Young because I love him or other people love him. Go with who you love and make sure you have total conviction in whoever that is.
So you're Team Bryce and I'm Team Levis, but what you just said is the most important thing, regardless of who you get. It's building the support around that quarterback. And quite frankly, look, I love both quarterbacks. I love Bryce and I love Will Levis. I have Levis slightly ahead of Bryce Young. A lot of times whenever you promote Levis, people feel like you're demoting Bryce Young. I could even make the case, depending on which offense that you're going to be running, it's good at which quarterback you should be drafting. If you're going to go very pro style, like Will Levis has been playing in college, then Will Levis is going to be the better quarterback for that situation. If you're going to go Cliff Kingsbury, air raid, shotgun, 4-wide type of stuff and spread it all around, Bryce Young's probably the better quarterback for that situation. So the situation and the support is really more important than the pick, quite frankly. And I give the slight lean to Levis. So you're right. There needs to be an offensive I say head coach. I feel like there needs to be an offensive head coach. What do you mean both?
I think you got to have the right head coach and the right offensive coordinator.
Well, the head coach could be the OC, right?
It could be, right, true. But even still, like the support system is so important for a young quarterback new to this league. And so even though, like, I go back to all those years in Green Bay, whether McCarthy was calling the plays or LaFleur, the bottom line was you got two guys that got jobs because they were the offensive coordinator. You got guys that were around the quarterback every single day, putting them in the right mindset and in the right environment to run the right play the right way. I think that's what you have to have when you get when you draft a kid that's supposed to be your franchise quarterback.
713-780-ESPN. We agree there, and we disagree on the quarterback. I think we're being completely logical and rational to Killer Bees. Crazy. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Gary, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Gary?
Hey, does Nick Caserio hire the coach also? If he does he? Who hires the coach?
Well, we don't know. The last cycle, it was kind of something that was just forced upon everyone, and depending on who you talk to, it could have been anybody.
Okay, because the reason I was asking, if Nick Caserio goes out and gets his guys, and what have you, and he's competent enough to get the, whatever quarterback he selects or whatever. Those guys are in that same room, and if he sticks with the guy that took the Bears to the Super Bowl with no quarterback,
yeah,
is he not saying, I mean, he's competent enough to see that that's the best coach? I'm just asking.
Rex Grossman was terrible as a quarterback. Like, if you're comparing Rex Grossman to either one of this these draft prospects, then no. Like, Lovie's not the coach for either one of those guys.
What I'm talking about is he keeps Lovie Smith. So is he competent enough to say Lovie's our guy? If he's competent enough to select either one of those quarterbacks?
Sure. Okay. Is he competent enough? Yes, he's competent enough. Is he the best, most ideal coach? I'll ask you that question. If you draft a quarterback at number one, it doesn't matter which quarterback. You're drafting a quarterback at number one. Is Lovie Smith the best head coach for that situation?
Well, who else are we going to get? I'm asking you that. I mean,
I like Ben Johnson. I think Ben Johnson's an offensive wizard. He's made Jared Goff look a very mediocre quarterback, and he's turned him into a really good quarterback. So Ben Johnson's that guy for me. I think if you're drafting a quarterback at number one, it should be Ben Johnson. I think Ben Johnson's better in that situation than Lovie Smith. Do I think Lovie Smith's competent? Absolutely, Lovie Smith is competent. Is he the best coach for a quarterback? Absolutely not.
And we've already laid that out for everybody, including Gary, and that is that whether you get a new head coach or not, if Lovie somehow, some way survives to see another season, he has to get another offensive coordinator. That offensive coordinator has to be a more forward-thinking, modern-day NFL offensive mind that is going to be there for the foreseeable future, or at least the long haul, or several years with this young quarterback. It's harder to do, as you pointed out, Jeremy, because of the fact that those hot coordinators want head coaching jobs, not promises that eventually Lovie's going to be out, you'll have a chance to be in, when other teams are going to do right from the get-go and say, hey, you can be our offensive coordinator and our head coach, and we'll give it to you right now. So that's a tough proposition to try and keep Lovie, get another offensive coordinator that's young and up-and-coming and talented and can do all the things you want him to do, because other teams are going to want him too, and they're going to give him a job as the head coach that you're not willing to do if you want to hang on to Lovie Smith.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. You can have quarterback at one, but if it's Will Levis, your reaction. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Join us at WoundedWarriorProject.org.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
5627, keep Lovie and bring in Josh McCown as OC, LOL. I think that was in jest to Gary's call. That said, could it be worse? Would it be worse? Like, if Josh McCown was the play caller on this team, and I understand he was probably going to be the head coach if he was hired by the Houston Texans, but would it be worse? Would it be worse than this Pep Hamilton-led offense that the Texans have been in all year long?
I mean, I get what you're saying. Could it be worse? I mean, it always could be worse, but I mean, I think, I would rather see a guy try that has been in all the huddles, that has literally carried the clipboard next to a lot of different offensive coordinators, and I would like to think that it would be a little bit more innovative, that it would be a little bit more creative.
Yeah.
And I don't know, because I wasn't, as you know, a big supporter of the McCown hire, and I thought that he did need to get some seasoning and at least be on the staff, for a full season before they went full board and gave the guy the total control of head coach. But at the same time, what I've seen this year has not been impressive by any stretch from an offensive coordinator.
713-780-ESPN. You can have your quarterback at one, but what if it's Will Levis? What is that reaction like? 713-780-3776. We're talking about Goff last segment because I like Ben Johnson. Mm-hmm. If the Texans hired Ben Johnson as the head coach this offseason, I would be thrilled. He's at the top of my candidate list. Part of the reasons, because I think he's made Jared Goff relevant again. I think he is a big reason why Detroit is having success, and I like to hire coaches that are a big reason of why that team's having success. The argument I always use whenever I bring this up is, whenever you look at the New England Patriots, why did the Patriots have success? Bill Belichick. You can even throw Tom Brady in there. It wasn't Romeo Crennel. It wasn't Matt Patricia. It wasn't Josh McDaniels. It wasn't insert your New England protege that got hired by some other team. I want a coach who is the reason for the success of that team. And I think Ben Johnson's the reason of the success for Detroit, not Dan Campbell. 8437 said, Goff was already a Super Bowl quarterback before he got traded to the Lions. I think saying the Lions coach turned him into a good quarterback is a bit of a stretch. Okay, I understand that, 8437, but he certainly revitalized his career. And let's not pretend like the LA Rams didn't have a quarterback whisperer as well that made Jared Goff great. So, like, it shows you that coaching matters, but also that coach that is a quarterback whisperer in Sean McVay, he realized that he was capped out with Jared Goff. He realized that he had met his ceiling. And what did he do? Because Goff has a bad contract, they traded Jared Goff and first-round draft picks to Detroit for Matthew Stafford, who's slightly better than Jared Goff. And they won a Super Bowl, so it all worked out. That's great, that's great, that's great. But Goff had a period of time in his career, the last couple of years in L.A., the first year in Detroit last year, where Goff looked like a bottom 10 quarterback, bottom 10 starting quarterback in the league, and then this year he looks like he is that Super Bowl quarterback again, thanks to Ben Johnson.
See, that's my point. Like, to me, I've told the stories about how until the defensive coordinators and the other teams picked up on it, that McVay was not only the quarterback whisperer, he was whispering in the ear using the microphone in the quarterback's helmet until the 15-second mark of the play clock. So for a lot of reasons, early in his career, when the word started getting out, Goff was, whether it be fairly or unfairly, criticized because McVay was doing a lot of the work that a quarterback should do. Now, he's resurrected his career. The question I was going to ask you two guys is Ben Johnson giving you enough of a sample size? Because we've talked about the whole, you know, everything that went around McCown. But from a Ben Johnson perspective, and Brendan being our resident Lions expert, is 1 year doing this kind of things with the Lions offense enough for you to say this is a guy that can do it for the long haul as an OC or head coach in the NFL?
I think it's your chance to get in on him. That would be my answer. Mm-hmm. Should every team be willing to go to him right away? Probably not. But I'll tell you what, if you wait around a year and the Lions offense looks like this again next year, he might be the guy.
Yeah.
So I think if you're the Texans, it's your chance to get that kind of a coach.
You have to kind of be first to market when it comes to this, whenever you're the worst team in the NFL. Like, if you don't hire him, somebody's going to. Now, the timeline could be different. The timeline, I think he's going to get hired this offseason. I really do. I don't think he's back as the OC for Detroit next year. But if the Texans don't hire him this year, he's not going to be available next year, even if he doesn't get hired, because somebody else that's better in a better situation is going to go after Ben Johnson. And, like, this is the time to do it, too, because if you have the first pick and you're going quarterback and you want an offensive coach, like, this is the time. You don't want to draft the quarterback and then try to pigeonhole some offensive coordinator with that quarterback. That decision needs to be aligned. And quite frankly, that's my biggest grief with what we've seen under the Nick Caserio Houston Texans these last 2 years. Like, David Culley, Nick Caserio, I think that they were more aligned than Nick Caserio, Lovie Smith, because David Culley was going to let Nick Caserio run all over him and do whatever he wanted. And whenever they hired Lovie Smith, everybody was like, well, you know, Lovie Smith's going to have a backbone and a spine, and he's going to stand up to Nick Caserio. Like, that's great. I like when a coach does that, but part of the problem also is that you don't have alignment. You don't have Nick Caserio's philosophies aligned with Lovie Smith's philosophies. And I think that's important in the NFL whenever you have, you know, Nick Caserio wanting to draft a man-to-man corner who's very good, and then Lovie Smith saying that's the fifth most important defensive position, and I love that Derek Stingley's good at football, but we're going to play him in a cover two zone defense and put a governor on him the entire season. So you need alignment. So, like, we sit here and talk quarterback. I like Levis slightly more than Bryce Young. I think that the system matters more than both of those guys, quite frankly. And the one thing I want to see this offseason more than anything when it comes to the Houston Texans is, if you're going to keep Nick Caserio, and I believe that you should, you need to have alignment. Like, you need to allow Nick Caserio to go out and hire a good coach. And you could say that he hired David Culley. I think it was a bridge coach to, like, live through the rebuild. This has to be it. Cal McNair needs to give Nick Caserio the leeway to go out and hire whoever he wants. If it's Josh McCown, okay, let's let him ride or die with Josh McCown. But you need to give him the one coaching hire that he's going to hitch his wagon to. It needs to be this offseason, and there needs to be alignment with the number one pick. If it's Levis, if it's Young, if it's a defensive player, or if it's a trade down, there has to be alignment between the two.
Well, and here's what I would say too: you can't do any worse than you did with your first two hires, right? But at least this one, put your full stamp on. Get get Cal to stay out of the way, and everybody else, no more Jack Easterby, and it's all you to do whatever you want to do. But this is it for you. So, this is, ride or die. This is your guy. So you go get him, and then that's it. And whatever, however he does, is exactly how you're going to do. And that's going to dictate your fate in a lot of ways, too. And then on top of that, you look at it, because we both agreed that that Culley was a bridge coach. And at that point, you were hiring a guy that was more focused on culture and attitude and locker room than sidelines and football and wins. And we also said that the way we kind of, in our minds, kind of highlighted how the plan would be in terms of getting to the next level and taking the rebuild to the next level. At a certain point, especially when you get your quarterback, that's when wins matter more. That's when you're now looking for being more results-driven and results-oriented. That's when the coach has to be – it's more about the coach and the field and the locker – than it is the locker room and the culture. And that's where you can draw the line, too, and say, okay, this is the guy you said was going to be our guy to take it the next step, where we're not just bridging anymore. Now we're competing. Now we're trying to do some things. This is the guy that you wanted as your head coach. This is all the things that we gave you total control of. Now you can be critical of Nick Caserio, and you obviously are going to be critical of the coaching staff that are going to play such a major role in your quarterback's development.
Yeah. Hey, Granato and I were having a back and forth the other day on Twitter, because they posted a video on SportsMap, but they kind of took me out of context. I was saying trade down, build the team more than building that one specific position. And, so I responded. I was like, I'm not really opposed to taking a quarterback this year. Obviously, I'm not, because I have this Will Levis crush. I'm just kind of more on the trade down point of view. And then Steph Stradley, who's one of my favorite people, great follow on Twitter, really good insight. She had the response that is the best response you can have. Like, the Texans don't even really know who their coach is going to be when the draft comes around. So it very much depends on the philosophy of this team. Now, if we're predicting philosophy, like we're kind of making the assumption that Lovie Smith's not going to be back, we're kind of making the assumption that Nick Caserio is going to get the opportunity to hire his guy, which both of those things aren't guarantees. There's not a guarantee that Lovie's gone. There's not a guarantee Nick Caserio is here. So we're kind of making those assumptions. But if we assume that Nick Caserio finally is going to get his opportunity to hire a coach that he's aligned with, my prediction is that alignment isn't going to go towards Bryce Young. That's just a prediction. That's a prediction. We don't have a huge sample size of Nick Caserio drafting quarterbacks with the Texans. We only seen Davis Mills. He signed Kyle Allen. He brought in Jeff Driskel. Like, that's not a great sample size. And a lot of times we jump to the conclusion that he's going to do what Belichick did in New England, which is they're going to draft big quarterbacks, 6'3", mm-hmm. that they can fit into their system, their philosophy, and that's how they're going to play football. Like, I don't think Bill Belichick would draft a Bryce Young. So we assume that Nick Caserio, because he's a Bill Belichick disciple, wouldn't draft Bryce Young. But that coach matters. That coach matters more than the first pick of the NFL draft currently.
Well, and that's why the alignment that you mentioned is so hyper important, because you have to be on the same page, or you also have to be willing to be able to have a spirited discussion about, as the head coach and the running an offense that I want to run, then maybe Bryce Young has some traits and some things, and he brings to the table some intangibles and some things that interest me a whole hell of a lot, like Eric Edholm was talking about, in terms of his ability to think the game play after play and while the play is going on, and some of the things we've talked about in the past, pocket presence and the things that has actually made him endearing to me in terms of who they should take. You have to be able to have those discussions without being lovey and saying, whatever you want to do, I'm still going to do it my way when it comes to Sunday. And the Culley approach, which was basically, I'm just here, happy to be here. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I can help the team and collect a check until it's time to say the wrong thing at a press conference, or not call a timeout or game management or whatever it is. So we've seen two things run the wrong way. Now it's all about the right way. Now, can you get a guy that you can – look, because we know Bill O'Brien got his guys, and then he found out that he didn't like it when his guys would have pushback and didn't agree with everything he said. And that's why we saw guys come and go so quickly, no matter if it was the general manager, other guys that he had hired within the organization. So it's a very, very important position to get to, but it's more about the communication before you decide on who your guy's going to be, to have an understanding that, hey, look, I'm not as a head coach, I'm not going to agree with everything the way you want to do it, and that should be okay no matter what our titles are. We're both supposed to be on the same page for the same common goal of making this football team better.
The force has to be the same, though. Like, you have to have the same general philosophy. Now, if you differ on a player, that's different. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Xander, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Xander?
Hey, can y'all hear me?
Yep.
This is what I think the Texans should do. They should trade that number one back, maybe talk to the Lions, see if they want to take that fourth or the fifth overall, maybe another first round or a second round pick, and take Stroud and get rid of Cooks. He clearly doesn't want to be there.
Appreciate it. So Xander wants to trade down, take quarterback. I want to respond to that on the other side. We'll get Blanker's thoughts on that as well. Also, your calls and texts, 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, we're feeling jolly. Killer Bees are always jolly. We're always in a
Christmas spirit.
We're always in a holiday spirit. I mean, you look at us, too. You look at Blanks. You look at Branham. We're always very merry and cheerful. So join us as we celebrate Christmas a little early with ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 Season of Giving. Today we're giving away $50 gift cards to Frankie's Italian Kitchen. Killer Bees want to buy you supper. Caller number 11 to 713-780-3776 wins a gift card to try all of your favorite Italian meals and more at Frankie's Italian Kitchen. Opening soon in the Katy Fulcher area. Tune in all December long for our Season of Giving. And don't forget to join us tomorrow, December 23rd, for our annual Christmas party. Don't let the cold keep you from the party. We'll be broadcasting indoors from Nick's Place all day, 7 a. to 7 p. Swing on by. See your second and third favorite ESPN 97.5 personalities. Blankers, Xander called in just a moment ago. Says, yep. Trade back, take Stroud. I love the idea of trading back. I don't think Stroud's the prospect that many people think he's going to be. I think we're going to see Stroud end up sliding. But I don't really want to spend like too much time talking specifically about the quarterback that Xander proposed. The trade back philosophy is obviously one that I am a proponent of. I'm in favor of. I have become a little fearful, though, with the trade back mentality, because I love both of these quarterbacks. If you can get either one of these quarterbacks, I could get excited behind it. And the two quarterbacks I love, of course, are Bryce Young, Will Levis. Levis, I have a slight lead over Bryce Young. If you get either one of those guys, I'd be excited. I know I've been a proponent of trading down. I know that I've pointed to some things about how the situation around the quarterback a lot of times is more important than the quarterback itself. The one fear that I have, and look, I'm still in favor of trading back, but the fear that I have is trading back so far where it takes you out of the range of both of those quarterbacks. And I think as we get closer and closer to April 27th, I think both of those quarterbacks are top five picks.
Yeah, see, that's where I was thinking about this. The more that I was kind of analyzing your opinion, my opinion, and then the draft and the people's opinions of who's going to be where. And as it relates to the previous caller too, Xander, I look at it and say, you have the pick of the litter right now. But again, I don't mind if you can orchestrate a trade down as long as you can still, again, going back to what I said earlier, as long as you can still get your guy, Nick Caserio's guy, whoever that might be. And it might be different than you think or I think or anybody else thinks, but I want it to be exactly who he thinks. And so I go back to the NBA and the trade that the Celtics made the year they wanted Jason Tatum. They were able to get their guy, but they got him at 3, orchestrated a trade, got an extra number one pick and some sweeteners. On top of it, Philly got who they wanted in Markelle Fultz, which was a complete disaster. But you not only got your guy, and you also got extra draft capital to make your future even brighter. If the Texans can do something like that, if they can orchestrate a trade and say, I'm still going to be able to get my guy, whoever it is, because projections and everybody that I've talked to in teams and what their needs are look like I can get to 4 or 5, like Xander said, but the Lions, if they're not going to look quarterback, and I don't know, Brendan probably knows better what they might be looking for. But regardless, if you feel like your guy is available and you know the threshold, like you know earliest he could go is 4, latest he could go is 8, mm-hmm. All right? Then I need to make sure I'm at 4 or as close to it as I can get. And then I'm also willing to roll the dice and realize I have to accept it if he's not there now. Because it's a big gamble, and I know that everybody is thinking you have to get a quarterback. So that's why it's an art form and such a science to be able to do what everybody thinks is so easy to do. Oh, it's easy to say, trade down, but to what position to still get the guy that you want, that you feel like is the best at the position you're trying to draft?
You have to be a really good general manager. You have to be really good. And look, Nick Caserio... Kenyon Green pick doesn't look great right now in hindsight, way too soon to be defining a rookie, you know, 1 year into a 4-year, potentially a 5-year deal for first rounders. So, like, I'm not going to say Kenyon Green was a bad draft pick yet. We can look at it right now and say, to date, was it the right pick? No. But Nick Caserio knew when he was on the clock that he wanted Kenyon Green. He knew that he could trade down a few spots and select Kenyon Green and add some draft capital around that. So Caserio has shown you that he is capable of doing that. Now people would point to the pick and say he didn't necessarily hit the pick out of the park. But you like, I love that idea. And like the second part of that, too, is the people aren't going to like that. Or like what I say here, but my favorite quarterback prospect in this two-year window is Caleb Williams. So for me, if I'm Nick Caserio, I am more willing to take a gamble like that, like that you just suggested, knowing that like, Caserio probably not going to think this way because he feels like his seat could be hot. He thinks he could be fired. But if I'm looking out for the best interests of my organization and I'm saying, I think I can get Will Levis at number 5 or 6, and who cares what the draft order is today? It's going to change before the end of the season. And he says, I'll trade down 1 to pick number 5 because I think I'm going to get Levis there, but then he goes number 4. The kind of insurance that you have is that, okay, well, Caleb Williams, you think, could be the best quarterback in this two-year cycle. He could be like the contingency plan. Now, people don't love that because you're not getting quarterback right away, but I think it's something you got to consider if you're a general manager in the league.
Well, and the other thing, Jeremy, I think that has to be focused on and considered at some point is everybody's focus for next year's draft has just been Caleb Williams and Caleb Williams alone. I think you have to analyze the entire draft, too, and say, are there other guys that might not be Caleb Williams? Yeah, but the Drake Mays and some of the other guys that could be coming out that say, hey, I could be in the ballpark. I could still get a hyper-talented quarterback. Maybe he doesn't have the accolades and the media attention of Caleb Williams, but maybe he's a guy just like that. So again, next year, I'll have multiple choices. I don't have to just zero in all my efforts on embracing the suck again so that I can get that number one pick one more time, and this time probably going to take a quarterback number one overall. So you have to start doing all kinds of extended research and development in terms of what am I looking at? Who am I looking at? What are the fallback plans? Because you're right. This year, your fallback plan could be then maybe I don't take a quarterback if the chips don't fall where I need them to. But maybe I still get a ton of good football players. They make my roster better. They make my depth better. They make the future better. But they damn sure better not make next season better if you still don't have a quarterback because now it's a different ballgame because now you're really rolling the dice to make sure that everything falls in place so that you once again can control your destiny.
Yeah, I understand the risk there. I get that. Like, I totally understand the risk, and it's probably too much risk than a guy that Nick Caserio is willing to take on because, look, Nick Caserio is going to feel pressure even if there's not a ton of pressure, so it's hard to make a decision like that even if you think it could be in the best interest.
But you know what I'm saying too, Jeremy. Look,
they should be doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because I'm not saying, look, it has to be one guy, and I know that it's a challenge. My thing is, every year we know that the draft is going to probably, except for last year, which was an abomination, but when you look at it and say every year there's more than one guy that can play quarterback in the NFL that should be highly regarded, figure out every possible guy that could be that guy just so you can plan accordingly.
Because we have, I mean, we're going to have debates about Bryce Young versus Will Levis, where if you can get Will Levis at 5 and trade down, the conversation is not really Bryce Young versus Will Levis. It's Bryce Young versus Will Levis plus the draft capital you get of trading down. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Real quick before we go out there, a degenerate gambler on Twitch, because we were talking about, like, who does Caserio, how does he profile a quarterback he wants? And we haven't had a big sample. He drafted Davis Mills. He signed Jeff Driskel, Kyle Allen. We forgot Tyrod Taylor. He signed Tyrod Taylor, who's only 6'1". So, like, that's a little different than we would expect from a Belichick, New England Patriots style. But 6'1", still a little bigger than 5'10", which a lot of people are predicting Bryce Young's going to be. But we'll wait till, you know, combine and that sort of stuff. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Mark, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Mark?
Hey, how y'all doing, man? Hey, you gotta realize, man, I've been looking at TV for so long, man. Hey, we need talent, man. We need talent, talent, talent. Will Levis and Bryce Young, you know, it's the reason why midgets don't play football because they're targeting to go get lit up. Will Levis, I like Will Levis because I think Pep them can deal with him and stuff. But me myself, I would get Anthony Richardson and definitely got to get some pass rushing. I take that there. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Mark. Mark, you had me there because you were talking my love language, and my love language right now is Will Levis. Lost me whenever he said Pep Hamilton.
I heard it, too.
Lost me when he said Pep Hamilton. There's no way. There's
well,
no way.
Not only Pep Hamilton, but then, you know, if you're looking at a Richardson, you're looking at a project. Even if you like him and love him and think he's got everything, he's 2 years away from being a guy that I think would put that on display in the NFL and be successful. So I don't think you can wait that long if you're Nick Caserio or the Texans or their fan base. So I think it's a different proposition, a different scenario, and it would definitely involve probably a lot of different people before you get down to him playing football.
You talked me into making Anthony Richardson a priority for me to watch film on, because I'm dedicated to the craft. I really am. I'm committed to the craft. So I told everybody yesterday, I'm going to watch every single snap that Will Levis has taken the last 2 years at Kentucky. He's only 2 years at Kentucky. I'm going to watch every single snap that Bryce Young has taken. I'm probably about 40 to 50% complete on Will Levis. I'm probably about 35, 40% complete on Bryce Young. Love them both. I'm only going to watch Anthony Richardson this year. Like last year, he was kind of playing part-time. It was a different coaching staff. I'm going to watch this year Anthony Richardson. I watched his game against Utah last night, which is the one that Eric Edholm pointed to, which is like the best game that he had on film early this year. Everything you said about him is completely true. Like, he's got all of the tools. He's got a cannon for an arm. He's a run-first quarterback, though, in a zone-read shotgun offense. So whenever you say project, he's kind of one of those dudes that might be 2 years away from being 2 years away.
Yeah,
it's going to take patience with Anthony Richardson. So if you're not willing to be patient, Anthony Richardson ain't the guy for you.
Right. No, and that's a big concern, and that's why I don't think he might be the right fit for somebody else. I don't think he's the right fit for this team, this franchise, this scenario, and what they've already gone through. So I think that I could see a lot of teams being enamored with him because he has those measurables, because he is a big, athletic, strong, fast kid. Mm-hmm. But I think that, again, he's young and he's raw, and it's going to take the right coaches and the right patience to be able to do that. And then, like you said, he might be 2 years away from being 2 years away, because then when he starts playing, you've got to do exactly what the Baltimore Ravens did, but maybe in a different way. You've got to retune and completely redefine your playbook so that it better suits the attributes that you're getting with him, so that your offense has a chance to be successful. Because if you force the kid to do something that he's not really skilled or capable of doing right away, it could be a failure. It could be a mental issue. It could create a lot more problems.
Yeah, 100%. You got to cater the offense around him whenever he is ready. 713-780-ESPN. And Richard's actually my third favorite quarterback after Young and Levis. Anyways, we do it every Thursday at 2. We find out who made the list, who had the worst takes of the week. If you have any to add, 713-780-ESPN. Bad Take Boulevard with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favorite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a not-not.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words "Jesus saves" written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.